Preface. I decided finally, late last August, after much back and forth the previous 2 years, that it was time for me to retire. Maybe past time. It was too late then to vacate my place in the fall schedule, and I didn't want to move cross-country, my retirement plan, midwinter, too cold and dark. So I decided to make my final year of teaching as memorable for myself as I could. The fall term was all of that, the best teaching I had ever done, I'd say, and many students agreed. The winter term started off strong, too. In mid-January, with my usual hubris, I decided I would write another book, a companion piece for this fall, the book I wrote in the aftermath of my wife Carol's sudden passing in 2015. Call it Last Spring. So cool, I thought. Yeah, right. Taking advantage of the double meanings, as I had with the previous book. I planned to ground it in my daily walks in Boyce Park as I had before, and get off to a start with it in January, figuring I could drift into it slowly, like the January snow, just a few essays, then gradually ramp it up through April, when I imagined my emotional intensity would peak. What a good plan. That's not what happened, though, and it never will now. I did write 6 brief essays from mid to late January, like the ones in this fall, 3 to 6 pages, same style, etc. I was on my way. Then I wasn't. I got the flu in early February, very terribly so, as sick as I can remember being since I had pneumonia about 30 years ago. Deathly ill, I can see now in retrospect, though I didn't sense that at the time, with the ravages of fever and torpor clouding my judgment. It took me more than a week to get out of bed, then another few weeks to get back to a semblance of normalcy, some very scary vision impairments part of the healing process. I didn't get out for my next walk in the park until March 10th, a 6-week hiatus. There were days in between I thought I would never see that place again. It was very emotional for me, what I saw, thought, felt on that walk, and I knew, with absolute certainty, about halfway through it, that I would write one more essay when I got home, then I would be done. I had no desire to write another word about my last spring, no desire to write any more words at all. I already had said everything I had to say. So my book became this pamphlet, the 50-some pages you are about to encounter if you turn the page, not last spring in italics, but last spring in quotation marks. I like it. It says everything I have to say about everything I have left to say. Done. W.H. Auden, in his spare, haunting elegy in memory of W.B. Yeats, says famously and ominously that poetry makes nothing happen. I think that's true. And at least today, right now, finally starting to see clearly again after weeks of blurry double vision, I want to say, more generally, that words make nothing happen. Not the things that most matter, anyway. They don't create love or extinguish hate. They don't change minds at the deeper level where it really counts. At least not my words. Believe me, I have tried to use them to make all those things happen, and it hasn't worked, as far as I can tell. Maybe your words work better. I hope so. Mine just don't. So what's left then, when all the words are gone, have left bereftly, realizing their inefficacy? Well, Auden gives a clue in that same poem. Immediately after the clause I just quoted, he says of poetry, "It survives in the valley of its making, where executives would never want to tamper, flows on south from ranches of isolation and the busy griefs, raw towns that we believe and die in, it survives, a way of happening, a mouth." So, yes, poetry makes nothing happen. That's the line everyone quotes gravely. Yet, somehow, away from the world's business and the even more forlorn and pointless busyness that afflicts our more personal human endeavor, it survives as a way of happening, he says. The difference between makes and survives, between happen and of happening, seem minuscule on the face of it, beyond subtle. But it must be of some consequence. Auden is not stupid or careless. So, away. Toward what? It's hard to say. It must have something to do with that mouth at the end of this stanza, the close of the first half of the poem. That mouth, which here, in the context of his figure, is where the river meets the sea, ceases to be itself, and joins the partnership of many other rivers in the vast reaches of all that deep water. Here's what I want to say about that today. The mouth makes sounds, all kinds of them, including the most beautiful. To hear them, you need to be near it, listening, paying attention. It belongs to the body that fills its chambers, and all the words that arise therein, with the breath of the life that body has lived here, of the time it has taken to get to their moment, compressed into every word that mouth shapes. Right now. To come to know all of that, and you can, believe me, all of it, every little bit, come nearer. Open your ear. Hear. With your whole being, meaning resonating in every nerve end. And when you make words, care about them in just that way. Then they will survive. A way of happening for those who care to hear. It doesn't really matter that they make nothing happen. Maybe the sea can do that. If enough mouths pour enough fresh water into it, together, the many becoming one. Maybe not. I don't know. I do know this. If you want to know what and how I've survived, come here. Come near. Ear to mouth. Close. You can do at least some of that, I believe, by reading words on a page. The listening, hearing, the nearness, all of it. I know that, too. I've spent my life turning other people's words on the page into my body, my life, all those mouths opening toward my ear and then finding their way to my mouth. My mouth. Mine. I guess to do that, you have to become like the sea, receptive to what each river delivers from its mouth. Maybe something like that. You might recall that when the stupid, tricky Pharisees try to catch Jesus in a contradiction about his lack of interest in following the rules of the tradition, specifically about what goes into the mouth and how clean the hands are in the process, he says, at the close of a stunning rebuke, "A man is not defiled by what enters his mouth, but by what comes out of it." This, to me, is the moment the Old Testament becomes new, the moment Christianity first opens its mouth to the wide seas. Yes, listen and understand together, right now. Two hard things. But without them, that second sentence, the one everyone focuses on, will never become a way of happening for anyone, as it doesn't for the stupid, tricky Pharisees. All kinds of good and bad things, lovely things, vile things, come out of my mouth, of course. I'm inclined to say today, though, that all of them are worthy, in some way. I am alone now, maybe 98% of the time. I used to have someone who heard my mouth speak. Now I don't. I've been trying for 3 years to find a way to make something happen with all these words. As far as I can tell, it hasn't worked. Not on a larger scale, anyway. There have been a few quite moving responses my work has incited, delivered to me personally, for which I am deeply grateful. All I needed, really, I guess I'd say. But the river of words that poured from my mouth into the vast horizonless sea of the public world ran dry on March 10th. There comes a time for every mouth to fall silent, not just the way it does between words to mark their passages, but completely, at least for a while, to gather the life left in the body toward some other purpose. I think that's where I'm at right now. My writing mouth run dry. You could turn your reading ear as near as you want, and you won't hear it make any noise. I need to be quiet now, for a good while. If you want to hear my words, my mouth, then come to see me, or call me. Those of you who do, well, you know, I can run on like a rattletrap when I hear another mouth turning voice into words across the table or at the other end of the line. Or send me a note or an email, even a text, a real one, I mean, one with your mouth behind it, your body behind it, your life in it. I will respond to you, just you, and I'll be right there where you, just you, can hear me. As much of all of me as you can bear. Words can do that, I know. And when they do, they are poems. No matter what they look like on the page or screen or sound like in the air, they make nothing happen. They are a way of happening. That's what I take away from thinking about Auden and Yeats even greater today. In a couple of months, I'll be leaving Pitt and Pittsburgh for good. First, for Olympia, Washington, to spend the summer months and maybe more in the vicinity of my daughter, whom I haven't gotten to see much since she moved out there 12 years ago, who, along with my son, has stood by me steadfastly these last 3 years through thick and thin, who actually wants to have me closer by. Bridget and Joe have been constant voices, mouths, lives for me during this awful and awesome time, sometimes in person, mostly at the other end of a phone line. I love hearing their words. I can tell in an instant, in each of their voices, how they are doing, feeling, what I might need to say back as a way of happening, doing. They hear and know my voice too, just that way. All of me in it, right then. And they know what to say back as a way of happening, doing. They survive and help me to do the same. Beyond this summer, well, I have no clear idea about exactly the where I might end up or exactly the what I might decide to do. With my remaining time and remaining energy, maybe I'll just eat, sleep, and walk. Maybe I'll fall in love with someone who will fall in love with me. Maybe I'll find a friend who likes to watch baseball games and drink tea. Maybe I'll build rabbit hutches or carve birds. Maybe I will do some good for some people who need someone to do some good for them. Whatever it turns out to be, I hope I won't write about it. Or if I do, unable to shake this lifelong habit, I hope it will be different, funny, strange, adorned with little painted figures maybe, hand-printed and stamped on single sheets of parchment, each numbered, then corked inside many bottles, all dropped from a small boat into Puget Sound. So 100 years from now, someone, in China, say, might find one and wonder. Not something specific, just wonder. Yes, that's it. Just wonder.